Destination 384. This is the WWFD edition here. We're going to be talking a little bit about more about what that means in just a couple minutes. Hopefully, I'll get all the issues sorted out with the sound. I'm trying a different solution to our problem. The only real problem I've had since I upgraded to Windows 7, gotta say, is the one piece of software that I use to record the shows doesn't really work correctly. I can't actually get the times for the MP3s, so I can play them all. I just can't line them up like I had been before. So, oh well, it's all right. This is the Caffeination Podcast. We are the high-octane world of all of the caffeine culture and technology news that you can handle in somewhere around 30 minutes of content. So we're just going to try and keep coming out and giving you the best possible content that we can. The Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Head on over to techpodcast.com to see all of the other shows, including us, which agree to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. It is a great group of people over there. It's growing more every day. So if you, too, have a tech podcast, a podcast that can in some way be considered geeky or something like that, head on over there and you can join up and reap the benefits of dealing with some relatively awesome people. So, all of that aside, this is the Caffeination Podcast, and you can find me over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com for those of you who can't spell. If you'd like to get into contact with us, it's caffeination@gmail.com, or you can dial our digits at 215-240-1319. It's a little direct-to-voicemail line. You can leave comments, feedback, suggestion, hate email, or voicemail, as the case may be. So, yeah, it's been an awesome week so far. It's I don't know who did what to the water in Philadelphia the past couple weeks, but it has really been crazy every Monday for I don't know how long. I'd say it's been at least 3 or 4 weeks now where it's like Monday you get slammed with enough work that you could have normally carried through for the rest of the week. And I know a couple other people who are having these weird Mondays too, and The reason that this show is called WWFD, it stands for What Would Fishy Do? And it stems back to the fact that I at one point in time this week said that I had a fish that lived in my office with me, and I do. I have a 29-gallon fish tank. It's relatively awesome to have in the office, and there's one fish that's been living in there. He's a goldfish, red and white goldfish that's been living in there for now about 4 years completely alone. So he's kind of like me in the world. I'm alone. I have a wonderful and loving family. I have lots of online friends. Lots of friends in real life, but he's somewhat like me in work, except for the fact that he's lonely all the time. In work, I'm kind of on an island. I am my own little fish tank, so every once in a while when things get a little bit stressed out or when people start like harassing me, I look over at the fish and he's just sitting there swimming around. It's like, yeah, what would the fishy do? Well, the fishy would probably just sit there, go blub blub, wonder when the light's going to go on magically, and I hope I get fed sometime today. That's about it. So it's just been kind of you just kind of like let your problems all go. You sit there, stare at the fish for a little bit, and then you look back at the person who's been yelling at you for the last 5 minutes and say, okay, I'll do my best to help you. That's all you can do in this world. So it's been one of those kind of weeks, and I've been spreading the the gospel of the fishy around, as the case may be, and a couple other people have picked up using it, so there's going to be a logo coming down the pike not too long from now. The only picture I had of the fish really wasn't good, so I'm going to try and work it out and maybe have a fun little cartoony logo that we can put up there. So whenever you're having one of those days, you can just stare at your own little virtual fish. All right, wasted enough of your valuable time. I do want to talk to you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. Now, you've heard me talking about GoToMeeting for quite some time at this point. We've been a wonderful partner with them for well over 3 years. And I gotta tell you, it is a fantastic software solution. But do you know why we think it's the best way to host an online meeting? It's easy, that's why. You can join a meeting in seconds. There's absolutely no complicated setup. And your attendees don't even need to have an account on the server. You can send them the information, they can log on, they can sign up, they're on there before they even can ask you a question. You can share your keyboard or your mouse control between presenters. You can share certain programs or just the whole screen. You can even record your meetings. Phone conferencing numbers are included in email invitations and on the control panel. VoiceOver IP begins instantly when you start your session, and our listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited online meetings absolutely free. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcast. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcast to start your free trial. So we have a great contest. One more little thing, you really need to head on over to podcastmadness.com. The Caffeination Podcast is partnered with a whole bunch of other people to bring you a fantastic giveaway. This month they are giving away a high quality Epson Artisan 810 printer. All you need to do is head on over there, enter in your first name, your last name, email, and the code word INK, I-N-K. You can get that code word just from this podcast. If you'd like more code words and more opportunities to enter, you head on over there and you can check out the Caffeination Podcast, which you currently are. Our code word's INK, just in case you forgot it. CMS Weekly, Day in Tech History, Geekazine Podcast, Geek News Central, Mike Tech Show, SDR News, and Totally Cool Tech Podcast. A whole bunch of people who are all dedicated to trying to allow you to win this. And the contest ends on November 25th, so you need to hustle on up, head on over there, and enter in. So thank you very much to Jeffrey Powers for setting that whole thing up. We have a great amount of geek cruft here for you, a decent amount of food and caffeinated bits. Then we're going to head you out on the door. That didn't sound quite right, but oh well. I usually say I'll fix it in post. I don't even know if I'm going to end up fixing half the flubs that I've had recently. But it's been kind of fun. I'm doing some new stuff with the podcast. I'm trying to, I guess, inject a little bit more life into different areas. I know a lot of people really like the way that we have the show going, and I'm not going to change that. But I'd like to do more video. And the only problem is I don't like being in front of the camera, so we're going to try and do a couple other different things. I'm going to do a couple different coffee tech videos that I have planned out. I just need to find a time and a place to actually do them. The problem is you got to have the caffeination layer as it is squared away so I can spend the time on recording videos and stuff with the wife being happy about it. So that's kind of stuff's in the future. I'd like to know if there's anything else you'd like to see from the Caffeination Podcast. Help me, helped you to get a better podcast, a better little community going. All right, now the first thing I have up here is an awesome video I personally think it's awesome. I don't know if you know what Pecha Kucha is. Pecha Kucha is not some strange thing you might have stepped in on your trip in Japan. It's actually a presentation style pioneered by the architectural community in Japan because people were droning on and on and on, something I'm very familiar with, but they droned on and on and on during their presentations, during industry meetings. So the idea behind this is to actually distill what you're trying to do, one cohesive thought, one brilliant idea, hopefully, out into one very short presentation. It is literally supposed to be 20 by 20. It's 20 seconds long, 20 slides. That's it. That's all you can do. So I did one at PodCamp Philly. I thought it was fantastic. The only problem is I forgot what one of the slides was, so... But I also forgot any kind of recording, and I haven't seen any of them pop up of it yet. So that being the case, I decided to actually upload a new video where I just went through and I talked over, gave a little bit of a narration of the stuff that was up on the screen. It's not entirely the same, but it's the same thing. It's 20 slides by 20 seconds, and there's just an intro and an outro to it. So if you'd enjoy on learning about From Stupid, again, one of those things where it's just kind of flubbed on through. But if you'd like to learn From Stupid, or what I like to say, where you take the scenic road to knowledge, if you'd like to see my take on it, head on over there and check it out. There's some funny stories that you may or may not have heard by listening to the podcast for a while. All right, next thing we got coming up for you right here is recording industry bans aren't necessarily the problem. There's a great little article from over at techdirt.com where they're actually talking about recording industries making it almost impossible for any legit online music service to survive without being too expensive. Here's the main deal about this. Whenever you're paying a dollar for song on iTunes, 70% of that dollar goes to the RIAA. They say that it goes to the artist, but the artist might only see like 3 or 4 cents. Apple might see less, and then the rest of it's taken up by the credit card companies or whoever else is processing the payments. It's no surprise that a lot of people, a lot of artists are dissatisfied with that. And when they're dissatisfied with this, they push back to the RIAA, which doesn't want to lessen their cut. If anything, they want more of a cut, so they push back to Apple and a couple of the other providers out there and say, hey, you know what, you should be charging more. Not we should be giving more of our money to the artists. I mean, nobody has a problem with supporting the artists. People have a problem when it comes down to the actual economics of the song. Each song costs a dollar, which in small micropayments doesn't seem bad. But when you realize, it's like, okay, let's just say you listen to 100,000 songs over your lifetime, which theoretically could happen. It's not going to take a short amount of time, but that's $100,000. It really kind of starts to build up there if you take a look at how much it costs to actually fill an iPod. So there's a couple different artists that are out there that have actually tried to find different ways of making money. Nine Inch Nails, Radiohead, and a couple others have actually released content for free and allowed people to pay for better versions of it at a reduced price, or pay what you will. And they've seen a lot more success with this than people originally thought they would. But the problem is, when you have services like Pandora or Last.fm or other services that are out there, they really hit a wall when it comes to the licensing fees between ASCAP, BMI, the recording industry, and with that, now you even have issues with the Motion Picture Association wants to stop you from being able to record with your DVR things that are on TV, because that you're taking away a revenue stream. If they put Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince on TV and they chop it all up with commercials, they edit it for time and content, and you recorded that, poor excuse for a version of the movie, then, you're taking money out of their coffers somehow. So these large licensing institutions are starting to really push back and are really kind of forcing a lot of these different things out of business. So it's an interesting read over there, Tech Dirt, and it's really kind of crazy to see some of the things that are still existent today. After we've seen like all these different capitulations recently. You've seen all these different turnovers where iTunes is now all of a sudden DRM free. But if you want to unlock your old collection of iTunes songs, you have to pay an extra 30 cents per song. So you already paid for the song, and if you bought it now, it would only be 99 cents, or it would be $1.30 if you were going to buy the newer tracks that are out, because now they have variable pricing too. But so. You have all these different things kind of going out there, and everybody has their hand in your wallet. You got to wonder, at what point in time, not do I get stuff for free, because you're not sitting there begging. You're just like, you just want to say, at what point in time is enough enough? Everybody joked about when Men in Black said, I'm going to have to buy the White Album all over again. But it's getting even worse now, because they actually want you to have one version for your iPod, one version for your computer, and God forbid your wife has an iPod and she'd like to listen to the song too. So, who knows? it's one of those things where you could just kind of ramble on down, but I'm going to try and just corral it right there. Next little thing that we have up for you right here is Google starts to feel the need for speed in ranking sites. Now, I like this idea. They're trying to play with the algorithm. Everybody's like, oh my God, Google has this new algorithm coming out called Caffeine. And before you get all excited, yes, I have heard of the fact that it's called Caffeine, and I'd like to thank everybody who sent me that little story about it, because yes, it is kind of cool that they would name it as such, and one of the reasons that they did is because they're looking for a little bit of speed. Not just in speed in actually walking through the billions and billions of websites that are out there, but they're actually going to be starting to reward speed of your website. So if your site loads quick, then they're going to give you a boost in the ratings. If your site load slowly, they're not necessarily going to do anything to your ratings, but if the people who are loading quicker are getting better ratings, you can kind of see where this goes. The cool thing about it is that they're actually going to be releasing a bunch of tools to allow you to make your site load quicker. So you can go over to code.google.com/speed. Here's the fun thing, though. They've realized that a lot of people rely on their search engine rankings and other couple things to actually make a lot of coin during this holiday season that is fast approaching. So they've held off actually implementing the Caffeine version of their software until after the holidays. I think this is actually kind of cool on their part. Also gives them more time to tweak it if they want to put it out on any of their development servers, just to see how it lives in the wild. All right, again, going back to some rather interesting commentary, the New York Times has a great article out there called A Case in Antiquities for Finders Keepers. Now, I don't know if you were aware of this. Archaeology is kind of my bag, but my thing, so to speak. Went to school for it. I really love it. I'm very passionate about it. Here's one of the big problems that's currently facing archaeology, the long and the short of it. Countries that previously had exploration done in them and artifacts taken out of them and maneuvered around the world are now asking for those artifacts back, none more vehemently than Egypt. In fact, the head Egyptologist over there, Zahi Hawass, is relatively dogged in his pursuit of a lot of the different stuff. And since people still want to conduct excavations in Egypt, you have to play by their rules, and nothing leaves the country. This is all well and good, except for the fact that a lot of the... if you really look at this article from over at New York Times, you can kind of see some of the problems with this. If none of the artifacts that ever seen by any of these countries or excavated from these countries, sorry, I'm trying to have a little bit of a fuzz ball stuck up in my brain right now. If none of the artifacts and articles that actually come out of these countries are ever left them, then there would be no new museum in Ohio that had pieces of Egypt. There'd be no spread of the information. Knowledge wants to be free, and I can understand why antiquities are to be treasured in the countries where they're currently found. I don't think that you should really go back into history and say, oh, you were basically looting our country, because your country didn't exist as it currently does. This article makes a great argument for that case, and it's kind of interesting to read the different things that they're actually attributing to this. First of all, the British Museum gave up a very valuable collection of antiquities to Turkey. Now, this is not in Zahi Hawass's kind of deal, but the problem with the collection is that once it got to Turkey, part of the valuables that were part and parcel of the excavation and the exhibit actually disappeared. So there's a big question as to the security of some of these developing countries, and the fact that they're trying to shut down the black market for these items to be traded back and forth. They're trying to remove that idea. They're saying, yes, we will still allow scholarly research into these types of things, but there's very important work that needs to be done in our own country. We want to keep our cultural history within the borders. And I respect it on one hand, but at the same point in time, it's like you kind of look at it and say, okay, so what are scientists supposed to do? How are we supposed to learn about everything? Because people interested in Egypt don't only live in Egypt. People interested in Egypt who want to see parts of it, you'd like to be able to go to a museum and see it. So I'm not saying, the things like King Tut's, which I actually did get to see some of the King Tut stuff when it came to the museum here in Philadelphia. It was unbelievable. As somebody who's spent most of his life, being enthralled by archaeology, seeing stuff that old sitting in front of you, that old, that valuable, and that like unbelievable, it really kind of sets you back. It's definitely a paradigm changing time in your life. But there's also other stuff that I've seen that's in the University of Penn Museum, and they have a mummy in there called Died Happy, if you wanted to pronounce his name correctly. His name is like D-E-J-D, died somehow, H-A-P-I, which is pronounced happy. So there you go. I mean, that kind of stuff wouldn't exist because it would all be in a warehouse somewhere. Top men would be looking at it in Egypt. And if you ask who, it's just top men. So it's an interesting read. I highly suggest you head on over there and check that out. Moving right from antiquity to something that's just as cool but much, much more modern. How about a little split window Corvette? Did you ever see one of them? I did. My uncle is a huge Corvette person. He had an awesome 1978 orange Corvette Stingray. It was beautiful. It's between that and the 1960 Corvette are the two cars that I would love to own at some point in time in my life, but I know that I'm probably never going to. That's all right, But this is a little article from over at Core 77. It's about pretty cars and nifty gadgets. They actually have one of the chairman of GM actually giving you the rundown of the new Corvette concept car. And the cool thing about this is, car people, I'm not like a real car person. I like cars. I like some of the design aspects, but you can tell by this guy who comes out and talks about the different lines and the different design features that went into actually looking at the Corvette, and you can hear the love in his voice. If you've never heard anybody talk about a car with like pure unadulterated love in their voice, you really need to head on over there and check out the video. But the cool thing is there's a bunch of different options, they said, which existed in older Corvettes, like the 1963, which had a split window. That was kind of a little bit of a problem because you couldn't see out the rearview mirror. Well, now that they have backup cameras, they kind of, over at Core 77, they showcased another little remake of a Hemi Barracuda, or sorry, a Dodge Challenger, where they actually used cameras to increase the viewable range to actually eliminate blind spots. They had a rear view camera all the way in the back, and they had two cameras, one on either side of the car, that actually gave up to 120 degrees of view, which is significantly more than your tiny little mirror. So I can't wait for, you know, side view mirrors to be a thing of the past, although I think it's kind of fun and cool aesthetically to see them, you know, all aerodynamically shaped. Imagine if they were gone and they were just replaced by tiny little cameras. So I just can't wait to see that kind of thing. So you can head on over there if you like Corvettes or you like cars. You can geek out on the new concept that's up there, or if you just like gadgets, you can see all the crazy cool thing that they did in Popular Mechanics with the tiny little camera sticking out instead of the mirrors. It's pretty fun. There's an article from over at itpro.co.uk that actually says IT professionals are the least likely to exercise of any profession in the United Kingdom, and they don't eat their five times a day either. As somebody who does not live in the United Kingdom but is an IT professional, I'm probably willing to say that this probably exists beyond the borders of the United Kingdom into a good number of other countries that are out there. Now, I know Americans have a rather bad reputation when it comes to exercise and being physically fit, but I do know very many people who are very physically fit and very, you know, into the whole health craze. I am unfortunately not one of them. I'd like to be. I just don't have that kind of motivation. But it's interesting to see, they say, you know, it's kind of an epidemic among IT workers, where they say, you know, only 19% of all of the IT workers in the UK actually exercise. Only 26% of the receptionists, 28 salespeople, checkout operators are 31, marketing professionals are 33%, customer service is 37, admin are 38, taxi drivers are 41, retail workers 45, and shop attendants are 47. So it's kind of an epidemic where nobody's really getting the amount of exercise they should, but IT pros are less so than all other people out there. I kind of think we need to really change this. I really need to find some way to get myself motivated. I don't know what's going to actually do it at this point, but, you know, I need to do it, and I know that. All right, interesting little article from over at the Geek Dad's blog in Wired.com. 10 geeky laws that should exist but don't. Going to give you a quick little rundown here. Monroe's Law, the law, a person in a geeky argument who can quote XKCD to support his position automatically wins the argument. This supersedes the Goodwin argument that says if you mention Hitler in an argument, you actually lose. This says, so even if the quote is about Hitler, the quoter still wins. Number two, Lucas's Law. There should be no movie so beloved that a special edition prequel or sequel cannot trample and forever slay its memory. Number three, Tolkien and Rowling's Law. I actually think this should just be Tolkien's Law. I'm not a big fan of Rowling in general, but no reasonably faithful movie adaptation of a book will ever be quite as good as the book it adapts. Thus, a great movie adaptation can only be made out of a truly amazing book. Somers and McCarthy Law. There's no dangerous, unscientific theory that can or so preposterous that no celebrity can espouse and advocate it. So basically, just because you're famous doesn't mean that you're right. They have the Jobs' Law, which talks about Steve Jobs. Says no matter how cool last year's tech was, as soon as somebody announces something new this year, the old stuff's going to seem old. My favorite is number six, Savage and Heinemann Law. Blowing stuff up is fun. Blowing stuff up in the name of science is awesome. Starbucks and Pete's Law. Caffeine is the most wonderful chemical compound known to humankind. If the field of chemistry was never identified or produced some single other useful compound, caffeine alone would be justification for the existence. Here's the problem with this law. This is the one that I take the most argument with. It should not be Starbucks and Pete's Law. Coffee is the second most traded commodity in the world after oil. It should be the coffee law. That's it. Starbucks can go pound sand for all I care. And for all most people care at this point, I think. Wilbur's Law, bacon makes everything better. This is true. Comic Book Guy Law, there's no detail of a movie too brief or inconsequential to become the subject of an hour-long diatribe. And 10, the Unified Geek Theory. At present, the President of the United States, the wealthiest person in the United States, the most trusted newscaster in the United States are all geeks. At the same time, movies based on comic book characters are routinely taking in hundreds of millions of dollars. The only reasonable conclusion is, we've won. Well, there's also a fun little article for a fun little comic over at a Penny Arcade where the two guys, Tycho and Gabe, are actually walking through the halls of a high school, and they see two nerds who just got, you know, I think like beaten up or something. This is a really old comic, and I can't actually find it. And Tycho leans into the one kid and says, I gotta tell you something. On the outside, we run it. We run things. Except he says it in a slightly more profane manner, as they are wont to do, but it's kind of cool to see that in practice. So I just wanted to share it with the group. Next little cool thing from over at Yanko Design. I love this website, and I really have to stop linking to it for everything, but they have so much cool stuff over there, I can't help doing it. This is just neat. It's called a map hole. The idea is that you take a manhole cover, you smooth it out, and then you actually put a map of the city in it. Here's the only thing, the only big problem. You'd actually have to make sure that the sewer workers who are going around taking these things up and working on them actually put them back down in the correct orientation. Either that or find some way to slot them so that they only fit into the street in the correct way. And I know that any one of these kind of design changes are going to make them completely useless. But if you actually look, it's a radial map of the different things that are around here. The only bad thing is when you actually look at them, they actually say, you know, they can actually be sponsored by different people. So you can say, hey, the McDonald's is 120 meters if you look at this direction on the thing, the Outback Steakhouse, and a couple other fun things. They also have a prototype as paper and a couple other interesting metal mock-up plates. I like this idea. I really think it's cool. I think they're kind of like trail markers for the urban person, but the problem with this is people aren't going to stand in the middle of the street staring down and saying, hey, now where do I want to go? They're going to hopefully be on the corner. So if you can find some way to adapt this idea to like a layout or a vinyl, something that you could lay down on a corner, like in the handicap ramp area, I think it'd be a lot more useful. It wouldn't look as nearly as pretty, but I think it would be a lot more useful. Just probably not as I guess it wouldn't be as durable since they're metal, but it would probably also reduce the overall cost in implementing them. Also from Geek Dad, they have a great 10 bad messages from good movies. Now, I'm not going to read down the whole thing, but it's kind of like taking the wrong message out of a movie, and they actually have some really, really good ones. They said, arrogance, brash self-confidence, and having had a heroic father are much more indicative of a competent leader than our experience and knowledge. You've gleaned this from the 2009 Star Trek movie. There's also my absolute favorite. Unconventional creative play is very, very wrong. And the way that they go out to say this, and they say, you know, Sid, the supposed villain from the first Toy Story, actually, you know, took his toys apart, reconfigured them, and put them in all kinds of crazy configurations. They're saying Sid was essentially a geek. And yes, if the toys hadn't been anthropomorphic, if they hadn't had feelings and everything, this wouldn't have been any kind of issue. It just would have been a non-starter. So it's kind of funny to see it in that way. All right, next little thing we have up for you here. I told you I really like Yanko Design, and this was unbelievable. It's called Off the Wall. It's a design example of how you can actually use wallpaper and extend them into three-dimensional space and have them do other things. So, for instance, there's a wallpaper that's just striped walls, but these stripes actually, you know, move out in kind of like a contour and actually turn into shelves, which are beautiful. And then there's another thing where there's a tessellated pattern across a wall, and then there in the corner, the pattern actually extends out into the space of the room, and behind the pattern exists a light. So then there's wall play where they actually have a bunch of things where it interacts with the things that your kids are doing in the room or the other design elements that are in the room. I'm much more of a fan of off the wall, things that actually extend into 3D space, just because I think it's a fantastic idea. It's really, really cool. All right, and then the last thing that I have for you here in the GeekCraft section, because we are actually running right a long time, as I usually expect us to do. Digital Natives by Zay Frank is a completely different take on the topic. Now, I know I've talked about this before. People rail on one side of the topic or another, and I actually have to give a presentation tomorrow at Temple on you know, how to educate people that are currently coming up through the educational system. You know, using social networks and social media to engage people in different manners, because I'm a firm believer in the fact that people who are entering college now, you know, if you are of that age, you have been taught differently, you consume media differently, you're much more multi-tracked as opposed to much more linear in the way that things are done. This is not a bad thing, it's just a different thing. There have been paradigm shifts all throughout history about how different people take and process media. The only problem with the computer revolution is that it's happening much quicker quicker than people can tend to process. In fact, entire generations are split down lines. So I'm kind of giving a presentation on a much smaller version of this. But these people are technically called digital natives. Now, this is something that this irritates me, but this is a term that I was using like 3 years ago in papers that I was writing, and it kind of got out, and other people have used it. I'm not saying other people stole my idea. I'm not saying I am the Napster from the movie The Italian Job, but what I'm saying is it's a concept that is very easy to glean from the available data. And Zay actually talked about his trip to Germany, where he met a bunch of people who were actually what they called digital natives, who were trying to basically change the world without, you know, without the benefit of experience. And it's really, really funny to see his take on it, because he's a humorist, he's an internet celebrity at times, but he's also something who I think has a very razor-sharp wit about certain things, and he has a very good sense at dissecting things. So you should really take the time to actually go through his draft. This is not funny. This is relatively serious, and it's good long paper. I'd say it's probably about 3 pages if you are actually printed out. But it talks about the differences between the two things, and the fact that there are definite connotations that get pushed out there when you say somebody's a digital native versus somebody who, you know, didn't grow up with technology. And there's people who are currently like 40 years old versus like people who are like 30 years old, and the people who are 30 years old might say that, oh yes, you know, I grew up with technology, versus the people who are 40 years old, I can't believe that, you know, they didn't have this when they were growing up, and they can't understand it the way I can. And then you see the people who are 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever, you know, kind of have a backlash, especially if you do it online. I myself have done it, written a couple articles, and had people come back at me, and I kind of started to realize that it's not necessarily, you know, just entirely, you know, nurturing. There's also a certain type of person who is much more apt to become a digital native or a naturalized citizen of the digital realm, if you really wanted to extrapolate it that far. So it's really interesting to see what Zay actually thought of it. So head on over to zayfrank.com and actually check out his latest post. Alright, we have a quick little rundown of the food and caffeinated bits, and then we're going to head you out on your way. This is a nice and early recording thing. I got to wrap my head around the fact that it's not 3 a.m. this time, and I'm trying to finish everything up. I'm relatively lucid. This is kind of strange. Alright, energy management tips. This is a beautiful article. It says, 6 energy management tips from the underslept, overworked father of many. Now, I gotta tell you that this is really, really cool. This is 6 tips that are unlike other tips that I've seen. The website is actually fitandbusydadblog.com. So it's a nice long mouthful, but it's really, really good content there. And this is what he says. Stay on schedule, even though every ounce of you is telling you not to. So if you're supposed to wake up at 5 o'clock every morning, don't hit the snooze button. Don't try and sleep in some days and get up early others. If you stay on a schedule, things will, even though you might be really dead tired when things happen, it's easier to do things when you know what you're supposed to be doing when. Number 2 is drink lots of water. This is something that I've really seen in my own life, especially my wife has seen this. She's very susceptible to this. But if you don't drink enough water, you start to kind of just run down and you're not really sure why. So you might start eating, you might start, you know, drinking tons of coffee. And while that does help you to a certain extent, people are going to throw the whole coffee's a diuretic thing in there. Yes, it is, but an incredibly small amount compared to the actual hydration you need to do in just plain water. So drink lots of water. Number 3 is the 20-minute nap. This is one thing that he does unscheduled. He says that, you know, this is a nice way to become incredibly refreshed. It's actually something I do accidentally before I record about half to three quarters of the episodes that I do. I, you know, just kind of sit there, run over the content one last time, read things to make sure I don't sound completely off base, and half the time I'll pass out for like 10-20 minutes, and when I wake up, I am up. I am ready to go. I need to find out if it's actually not a bad thing to do at other points in time during the day. I'm not a real big long napper, but 20-minute naps are nice and good. 20 hours, that'd be insane. Number 4 is something I attempt to do most of the time, except when it's around Halloween, I'm relatively successful. Avoid sugary foods. Now, I'm a huge junk food junkie, but I'm more along the lines of the salty things. I like, you know, the pretzels and the chips and stuff like that, but Sugary foods will give you that burst of energy and a hard crash. So it's real easy to fall into that trick. It's like, oh, you know what, I'm going to have a Snickers because, you know, I'm a little bit hungry. You know what, you're better off drinking some water and having a carrot. It's really kind of sad. Number five is caffeine management. And this kind of endeared this gentleman to my heart relatively heartily. It says, you already knew this, but this guy's he says he's an espresso junkie. And it says you need to work on the half-life of the espresso. They're saying, or the half-life of the caffeine. Caffeine starts to lose its effect in unsugared form after about 6 hours. Depending on how acclimated you are to using caffeine, it kind of, you know, changes one way or another. So it's interesting to see what he says. Number seven, which should be number six, is get outside. Sunlight actually has a nice big mood enhancer. So when you get a chance, eat your lunch outside, do things outside, step away from the computer. It's really a nice rejuvenating tip. So these are very easily manageable things compared to other sites that are out there. Oh, you should give up coffee completely. You should switch over it entirely, you know, full grain this and, you know, lean meat that. Yes, those are all well and good suggestions, but in the real world, it's not always possible to do absolutely every productivity tip that's out there. So these are six relatively easy things to follow. Next thing we have up for you here is No Money November. It's a interesting little blog where they're actually talking about coffee. In this one post, it's actually coffee that comes in a cube form. So it's a version of instant coffee. I'd really like to try this. This seems relatively cool because it actually has a nice little crema on top of the cup. I'd like to see if it actually is that way. Unfortunately, they seem to mostly be flavored. So there's vanilla, sambuca, brandy, amaretto, natural, and lemon. I've never had lemon coffee other than the fact that I've made, you know, iced coffee with a little bit of lemon. But this just seems kind of cool on one end, and I'm a little bit leery of it on the other, so I wanted to pass it along. Next little thing that we have for you here is Colonial Williamsburg has opened up America's only 18th century coffee house. I need to find a way to get down there and go to this. This is really cool. They've actually reconstructed R. Charlton's Coffee House, a major architectural and educational addition to the historic area. They've restored it, and you can get three types of drinks. You can get coffee, tea, and chocolate. Not hot chocolate, just regular old chocolate from the old school recipes, and they're doing the coffee the old way, and they're doing the tea the old way. This is really cool. I like the idea of Colonial Williamsburg. I've unfortunately never been, so this is something I'd like to take a look at. Next little thing that we have for you is instant gratification can't be ideal when it comes to coffee. It's an article that talks about the differences between instant coffee here in the United States, which is just basically just brown swill water, although I do have to say chocolate full of nuts once more has much, much, much better instant coffee than most other instant coffees that I've had out there. I have not yet tried the Starbucks Ready or Via Brew because I just can't bring myself to buy instant coffee from Starbucks at an incredibly high premium per serving. It's just not something that's in me. I mean, maybe I'll go in there, and if it's available and, you know, within easy grasp, I'll snag one thing just for the good of the group, but it just seems something very antithetical to how I view instant coffee. I don't know how, but all right, last thing I have for you here today is banana comes with a certain appeal. Now, over this week, I was sitting there, looking at my lunch, and I happened to have a banana. This banana had a relatively normal sticker on it. It was a Chiquita banana. It said, "Be a good banana at eatachiquita.com." And I realized that my banana had a social presence. In fact, so much so that I actually went to the website that was on my banana, after I ate the banana, of course, and realized that not only did it have a social presence, but after I tweeted about it, Eat a Chiquita account on Twitter actually responded back to me. I gave them feedback on the relatively crazy flash site that they had up there and said, you know, you do have a coffee house in your little banana town that exists in Eat a Chiquita, and it's inaccessible. There's nothing you can do there. So she's going to talk to her dev team about it. So if that happens, that would be fantastic. I got to really hand it to the people over at Chiquita Bananas because they're just selling bananas, but at the same point in time, they've built this entire social presence about the fact that they're selling bananas, which is in and of itself bananas. So, yeah, hats off to those fine people over there. They're doing so much better than the other sweet treat people that are out there. Have not, you know, even despite all the candy that we got from Halloween, not very many, if any, actually have a website or anything on them. So much so that, you know, you're looking at the Hershey's fun sized, which nothing is ever fun sized when it's that small. I don't know what kind of fun they're talking about. And it just says Hershey's chocolate bar, which there's not even ingredients. There's nothing. There's no extra effort put in there. So even if they had put, like, you know, Hershey's.com on there somewhere, tiny, even thin, you know, I would have felt a little bit better about it. There's no call to action. You're just supposed to eat the candy. So, all right, I've taken it up enough of your valuable time right near here. This is what happens when I record early. I tend to babble on. Thank you ever so much for sticking around. This has been a real fun episode. Hopefully we've engaged some conversation. Hopefully some stuff's going to come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. Just remember, head on over to podcastmadness.com. The code is INK, and you can get a very rare, very, very spiffy printer. Thank you ever so much to everybody who sends in content for the show over at caffeination@gmail.com. Comments, feedback, suggestion are always welcome. You can also dial in on our listener line at 215-240-1319, twitter.com/caffeination. There's a Facebook fan page. There's all kinds of fun stuff. So thank you ever so much, and stay caffeinated, people.